1, 2.
Welcome to Two for the Road, Movies with Matt and Adam.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Adam. We're a weekly movie pairing podcast. Every week we'll pick a theme, recommend a movie to the other guy he's not seen based on the theme, watch, and discuss.
And we have a 25-year age difference, so most of the movies I recommend were made before Adam was born.
Not this week.
Yeah.
So our theme this week is like bad comedians.
Failed comedians. Yeah.
So the first one is Scorsese and De Niro teaming up yet again for 1982's King of Comedy.
I ain't no cowboy, I just look like one. I ain't no prisoner, but I'm on the run.
Something a little different for them, I think. I think it was De Niro's first foray into comedy as sort of
comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have never guessed this was a Scorsese movie if I didn't know it before watching it. Because it didn't really feel like Scorsese, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like those shots that are Scorsese-esque. There wasn't like this big, like, soundtrack that is somewhat, like, disorienting by like what's happening on screen. It was like a very small
picture,
dark. Movie. Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of. I mean, you go through his filmography, and you know, there's certain movies that he made. The Age of Innocence, you know, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, things like that. That you would watch them and go, "Wow, that's a Scorsese movie." You know, and I think this is one of them. I actually think this is one of his most underrated films.
I would agree based on the box office.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to like figure out like where this was in like his run. I'm pulling it up real quick.
Okay.
Let's see. This is 82. Okay. So, wow, this is interesting. So, Raging Bull 80, King of Comedy 82. So those two just like working together. And then not until 85 do we get After Hours.
Oh.
So that's kind of a...
And that's another offbeat kind of Scorsese film.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of his... I haven't seen the stuff that you mentioned, like Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. I haven't seen... I don't even know what Boxcar Bertha is. I mean, is that...
That's like, very early.
Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, this movie felt more like After Hours than Goodfellas.
Right. Of course. I actually saw this... not for the first time, but I saw this... at the Castro Theater in San Francisco, a double feature, one afternoon, walked in about 12:30, left about 5:30, 6 o'clock, watched King of Comedy and After Hours.
Okay.
At this beautiful old theater that still had the organ player that would disappear when the movie started and stuff like that. And then I walked out, and it was... The Castro movie theater is located in the Castro district, which is the predominantly gay district of San Francisco. I walked out and I forgot it was Halloween. In the streets, it was Halloween. It was incredible. Walking after seeing these two really good movies, I walk out and there's San Francisco at the most bizarre. It was naked people all over the place. It was great.
Yeah. What's Halloween if you're not naked? I think that's the right order to watch those movies. I think you want to end with After Hours because that one ends in sort of a kind of way, right? If I remember correctly, like it lends on it's much lighter than
it ends. Okay, that was cool. You know, Cheech and Chong. You know, yeah. But this one ends a little differently, so. But.
So let's get into it. So this is our story of Rupert Pupkin,
whose name nobody can get right.
Right, he's one letter away from being a pumpkin.
Yeah.
So Rupert Pupkin, and he is a I guess like a unemployed, seemingly.
Or he's a delivery guy. Okay. There's that one scene where he goes to that one place and leaves off some packages. But that's the only kind of foray, or not foray, I use that word twice today. But that's just the only time that we ever see that he actually does something besides sit in his basement.
Lives in his mom's basement. No father figure, apparently.
No. His mom, played by Martin Scorsese's mom.
Martin, turn it down! So he's obsessed with, like, recording these comedy bits. He's got his basement set up like a talk show.
Like comedy Kramer. Club.
Yeah. Yeah, like the old Kramer bit. And spends the rest of his money on suits.
Mm-hmm. He's always got a new, nice, weird-looking suit.
He's kind of dressed as, like, Pee-wee Herman,
yeah,
in a way.
A little bit, yeah.
Interesting. Or, like, I guess Pee-wee Herman dressed as, like, him. And he is creepily obsessed with, like, this talk show, like, Johnny Carson type.
In fact, they offered Johnny Carson the role to play, and he said no. But Johnny Carson's producer is in the movie. He does play the producer for...
Okay, so did Johnny Carson do movies?
No. I mean, he might have done stuff early, but not once he was on TV.
Yeah, that's what I figured. It's a pretty busy schedule. I mean,
right. I don't think he was that... I mean, I never liked Jerry Lewis.
Yeah.
I don't like any of his movies.
Yeah.
He was fantastic in this.
He's good in this.
Yeah.
He always has, like... That, like, I know this is made in 82, but he's got, like, that 70s, like, sheen on him.
Yep.
Like, he always looks, like, oily.
Like, it's unctuous. His hair. Yeah.
Everything. Like, he just looks like...
Yeah.
He's just been, like, have, like, a once-over with Vaseline, and they just set him on his way.
Yeah.
Disgusting. This is a disgusting-looking human being.
Yeah.
So, Pupkin is, like, he's obsessed with... This is the part that I didn't like. The very beginning I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are these people, like, obsessed and screaming about, like, getting autographs. That's totally overblown, right? No one... Was it like that? Like, was Carson
I don't know if it would be for a talk show host.
Yeah.
It might be for an actor or a singer.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, All About Eve. At one time it was for people on Broadway. There was people hanging out. Not like... What we see, it's a little overdone, you know, with people pushing and shoving and giving the autograph books and all.
Because they give the books, how do they ever get them back?
Yeah, I know.
It's a poor system.
Yeah. You're never going to get them back.
Yeah, exactly. You're never going to get them back. Yeah, I guess the autograph thing is a little bit before my time. I know it existed, you know, when I was younger, but I mean, now it's like photos, right?
Right.
Get a photo with someone. So, yeah, he's kind of stalking Jerry Lewis's, like, back door where he walks out. He figured he'd maybe choose an alternate route, but whatever. That's the world we live in. He kind of saves him from a crazy fan who's Sandra Bernhardt.
Yeah.
They end up talking. He, like, takes him to, like, a diner? Or is that the imagination?
That's the imagination. Yeah.
He says, like, come by, drop by the studio, we'll set you up with something.
Call my secretary or my assistant.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, big mistake.
Right, because Rupert has very little self-awareness.
Right. Right. Yeah, not his superpower.
No.
And so he's like, we see all these scenes where, like, you think it's real for a second, and then you realize, oh, no, it's not, because they're not having dinner together. He's not going here together. Like, Rupert works up these things in his head, right. On one hand, it was interesting because, like, that's what successful people do. Like, mm-hmm. they visualize it, right?
Yep.
And they kind of, like, walk through what's going to happen, you know? Like, quarterback Russell Wilson, like, mm-hmm. famously, like, goes out in the field and runs plays by himself. And so he's doing it, but because he never gets successful, it's just loser behavior.
Right. Yeah. So. I had to tell... Gloria and I watched this. I actually watched it twice yesterday.
Okay.
Watched it in the morning, and Gloria and I watched it last night. And she says, well, how can you tell when it's not real? Or when it's... I says, if somebody's complimenting him, it's not real.
Right. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. If somebody's telling me how good he is, it's not real.
That's not real. Right. So most of this movie is him just, like, having these, like, misconnections, trying to get a hold of...
Jerry Langford?
Yeah, trying to get a hold of Jerry. And just can't do it, blowing him off. Assistants are blowing him off.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't take no for an answer. Keeps coming back. you know, and they keep trying to do things like call or give us a tape. Mm-hmm. But with Rupert, he just, you know, and that's the how they're trying to get rid of him. Mm-hmm. But with him, it just makes him come back more.
Right. They're like, oh, we'll come see you in the club. He's like, not doing that.
I'm not.
I'm a comedian. I don't perform. You know? It's like this crazy notion of, like, you think you're a comedian, but, like, you don't ever actually do it.
Right.
It's very modern, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, my father, who's in his 60s, he's in a quote-unquote band, but all these dudes never want to perform. They just want to get together and play music and so they can say they're in a band. And it's driving him crazy.
Right.
It's like no one actually wants to do the thing that they like say they this. Are. Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't want to get on stage.
Yeah, he just wants the identity, but not the effort. Mm-hmm. And also, we meet Sandra Bernhardt's character. They kind of bump into each other now and then. They're both obsessed with the same dude. Mm-hmm. She is, like, more, like, physically attracted to him.
Yes.
In a way that's...
Yeah, right. She's madly in love with him.
Right.
Sexually, all that stuff. Rupert just admires him. You're my hero kind of thing. And more hero worship.
Yeah.
Hers is more like, I want you.
Right.
You know.
But not, yeah, well, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rupert's more like looking for validation. He wants, like, he just wants someone to say, good job, Rupert.
Right.
Which is probably never hurt in his life. Also, he sees this girl he used to go to high school with, who's a bartender. He's convincing her that, no, like, trust me and this guy, you know, he's going to hook us up. We're going out to his house. He invited me out there. It's going to be great. I mean, talk about no self-awareness.
Right.
I mean, red flag. Like, Who is this? This woman is not the brightest, but,
no,
you know.
She goes along with it thinking, well, maybe he does.
What could go wrong?
Yeah. And everything goes wrong.
Yeah, so they show up, and Jerry's out golfing, comes home. He's pissed that they're even there, right?
Right.
They came into his, like, inner sanctum.
Right.
This is where
it's not his office or, you know, where he has a reception area that he can have the people push him out. This is his home, and his workers are going a little crazy.
Right. This is, like, his non-public area. This is the hands-off area. So that sets him off. He kind of dresses him down.
Calls him a moron this first time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jerry Lewis does play it well, right? He's like, he does a good job of being that public facing, like, hey. And then like, as soon as the door closes, like, oh, fuck these people. All I want is I just want a scotch and a blowjob and go to sleep, you know? So that's not the moment where they kidnap him, right? They do it later.
They do it later. When, Jerry has him thrown out of his office, I think, or the security people throw him out. I think that was it. And then suddenly in the next scene, he and Sandra Bernhardt are getting ready to, you know, kidnap the car.
Yeah, yeah. So they grab him, they take him back to his place, right?
Her place. It was her place.
Oh, okay. Pretty nice place for her place.
Yeah, she's rich.
Oh.
That's why she can do what
she's...
Yeah, she comes from a rich family who didn't love her.
Okay, well, that's a theme, right?
Yeah.
So they take him to a chair, and they make a deal with, like, the police, the FBI, the feds.
FBI.
Rupert's going to go on and do him, like...
His monologue.
Yeah, he's going to do, like, a tight five.
Yeah.
That's all he wants.
That's all he wants. Then he wants to be first on the show.
Mm-hmm.
He wants Tony Randall, who's guest hosting, mm-hmm. to read something he wrote,
mm-hmm.
you know, to introduce him. And that's it. And then he wants to go to where his girls, the girl he loves, is working, the bartender. And he turns the TV on,
mm-hmm.
or it was on, but he changes the channel and says, you know, look at me, I'm on. So it was like look at me.
Yeah, I'm on TV.
Yeah.
Validation.
Going to prison.
Yeah. He says, like, better to be king for a night than schmuck for your whole life.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So they're kind of, like, talking with Jerry as they're, like, taping him up and stuff. And so then Rupert leaves, and we just have Sandra with Jerry. And, like, she's like, oh, I've always wanted this moment. Like, imagine what I'm going to do with you. But she's so, like, innocent and childish in, like, her ideas of sex. Like, she doesn't know what to do, right? She's just
like, I want to do it right here on the table or something.
Right. But if pressed, I'm pretty sure she doesn't even know, like, actually what it is, right? She seemed, like, almost, like virginal, right? Like, she seemed, like, very, like, yeah, like, just young.
She's never had a real sexual encounter. Her sexual encounters are in her head.
Right, so she doesn't know what she wants. She just knows she wants something, and that something is, like, maybe this idea of sex, which she probably has never experienced.
Right.
And then, like we said, then Rupert is, his plan works. The Fed's surprisingly cooperative. Just let him do.
Can't believe that would happen today.
I don't think so. And then, yeah, like you said, he celebrates back at the bar. And the cops are there. The feds are watching him, and they got everything under control. And then they grab him.
He goes to prison.
And then
for 2 years.
Yep. And he comes out, and he's a hit.
Are we sure of that, or is it fantasy?
I'm not sure. What do you think?
I think it's real. I think the because I think the film itself is a lot on, you know, celebrity and how people become famous, and especially today. Back then, it wasn't nearly like it is today. You know, people become famous for nothing or for something wrong.
Negative, yeah.
Or something negative they've done. And then they become heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is what happens today. He gets out of prison. He writes a book. Probably never read a book.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets to write a book. Bestseller,
mm-hmm.
goes on TV, he's the king of comedy, that's his name, so I thought it was real. How about you?
Yeah, it makes, I mean, it fits with the whole movie as far as, like, the perspective, right? It's right. Like, it's sort of crapping on the whole thing you just laid out, and the most absurd result of that would be for him to become the actual king of comedy.
Yeah.
Like, he willed it into existence because he committed a crime, people knew about it. He had name recognition. There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yep.
And this is when your 15 minutes of fame could last, I guess, at least 2 years.
Right. And he's shameless, has no self-awareness, so he can get away with it.
And his bit was not bad.
No. It wasn't as bad as you would think it was.
Yeah. If he bombed, maybe none of that would have happened.
Right. But he got some laughs.
Yeah. And it was very dark.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that was the darkest part of the whole movie, probably, because he's just talking about, like, his childhood and how terrible it was. And he tried to make a joke, and it's like, oh, my God, like, this is awful. Like, without the laugh track, it's pretty bad.
Well, I think, I was explaining this to Gloria before. I said, now, this movie can be kind of brutal. Not in a physical, you know, whatever, that she hates, those kind of things. But this guy's so shameless, and so... that you just feel uncomfortable watching him in the scenes.
You know,
he makes you feel like he's that person that we all know that always, cause you kind of get around and you go, oh God, my skin's crawling, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's, I mean, this like leads into the next movie, but he's like this incel character.
Right.
Who's just like, if this movie was made now, he would just be heavily online.
Right.
You know, I mean, he'd be scrolling through like Jerry forums and,
right,
watching videos and doing that, but because of the time, he's just limited to like obsessing over it and thinking about like the hour long show he saw the night before.
And somehow he gets all of Jerry's information, which today would be easy, but back then in '82, like, where does he live?
Yeah,
does he put, you know, what does he do? That kind of stuff.
He's a delivery man. He's got access.
That's right. I forgot.
He's got access. But yeah, this is better than I expected. When we were first talking about it, you said it was kind of a comedy. I mean,
I laughed. Gloria and I laughed. The taping bit was kind of funny. And,
yeah.
You know. But I laughed uncomfortably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh yeah, I know that guy.
I know that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it did not end how I expected it to. I did not expect like kind of a positive ending to
for him, yeah. Yeah, it's not like him. A Scorsese movie where everybody gets wasted. You know, everybody's dead,
right?
Well,
so one thing I thought was interesting, like you said, this was like kind of it was not received well. Budget 20 million US and Canadian, gross 2.5 million.
Oh, see.
So,
yeah. Well, Scorsese films have never made a lot of money,
I guess,
you know. They're one of those, he's one of those directors that people who love him, and, you know, but he's an acquired taste for some people.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm sure Goodfellas made money.
I'm sure it did.
Yeah. But I bet you Raging Bull didn't.
Think so?
Yeah.
Let's check your theory.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Let me pull it up real quick.
Of course, his movies, too, cost, I mean, $20 million
for this. Yeah, where'd the money go for this?
Must sound like it was De Niro. And
Jerry Lewis?
Yeah. Oh, Jerry Lewis. I film in New York, too.
Okay, yeah, Raging Bull, budget $18 million, U.S.-Canadian gross $23.3 million.
So it didn't really... It's a better movie than $23 million movie.
Of course. Yeah, that's crazy that only made that much.
Yeah. So, and I bet you Taxi Driver made either.
Okay, I'm not looking all these up, man.
No, I'm not, but that's just the way it is with this.
Yeah, so I wonder if that's why it was so long between... I think it was 5 years between Raging... It was like Raging Bull, this 2 years later, then 3 years until After Hours. Yeah. So I wonder if there was Hollywood...
Because
like,
After Hours didn't make anything either, so...
Probably not. Probably not. Well, you go from working with De Niro to... what's that guy? Griffin Dunne?
Griffin Dunne.
Griffin Dunne.
Yeah.
Quite a swing. Quite a swing.
Yep.
I don't know, Matt. Anything else you want to say about the King of Comedy?
No, I thought the acting was done very well. It had a good soundtrack, I thought. De Niro is, I thought, fantastic in it. He's not nothing like he's done before or since, I don't think, you know. But I thought Sandra Bernhardt was terrific.
Yeah, what was her deal back then? Was she like in movies at that time?
She was more of a stand-up comic. Okay,
that's what I thought.
What I remember, but I don't know.
I only know her from Roseanne, but that's like 10 years after this.
Right. Yeah. She sort of dropped off the acting map after the 90s, I think, for the most part.
Well, she's kind of like, she's got like that one note, you know what I mean? Like, right, she's not like giving you a lot of range. No. She's just...
She's going to play annoying. This person.
Yeah. Gosh, she's got a lot of acting credits, though.
Yeah, she does. She got more than I do. Wow. Oh, well.
I wonder if she's doing voiceover stuff now. Yeah. That would make sense. 94 credits. Good Lord.
Did not know that. I misspoke.
Man, first coming out on the Richard Pryor Show.
Wow.
Who knew that was a show?
Yeah.
All right, Matt, you want to guess scores here? Let me pull up IMDb. 101,000 people checking in here.
More people than saw it all at the movies. That's
probably.
I'm going to go, I think, 7.7.
You're close. Yeah, 7.8.
Oh, okay.
I think
that feels about right.
Yeah, 7.7, 7.8. God, man. Every now and then I look at these posters. This might be the worst poster I think I've ever seen. It's De Niro on the Joker card holding a crown and Jerry Lee Lewis on the King card looking at each other.
Yeah.
It's awful. That's
it's not good.
That's no indication of what the film is about. All right, so moving over to Rotten Tomatoes, Tomato Meter 64 reviews.
I'm gonna go 9.
89. Yeah, you're close. And the audience is 90.
Okay. Well, critics and people liked it. So, those few of us that have seen it.
Yeah, this is the negative review from the Associated Press. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
This is from 2018. Scorsese is capable of building tension, but what is he trying to achieve? A comedy about the nature of fame? But he evokes only the most nervous of laughter. It's a weird negative review.
I don't think it's a comedy.
No.
I mean, I like I said, I laugh, but I don't think it's... I think it's more of a social commentary than a comedy.
Yeah. I mean, I actually think that... How can I say it? Like, having watched the next movie first, I think made me appreciate this one more. And then watching this one and then watching the second one again... made me appreciate the second one even more. You know, they're like kind of like linked up.
I totally felt that. And I'll talk about that.
I mean, De Niro's and both playing the same character, essentially, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it was just, like, this was maybe as dark as it could get for the time, but I kind of wish it was darker. But, you know, what are you going to do? Got to get that.
Well, I think if he had made this today, be a lot darker.
Maybe. I don't think he doesn't really go that dark. I mean, like gangster movies, but not like they're not like they don't really like explore like the darkness of like the human condition. You know what I mean?
Right.
All right. It's the consensus. Largely misunderstood upon its release, The King of Comedy today looks eerily prescient and features a fine performance by De Niro as a strangely sympathetic psychopath. Sympathetic.
I think I'll talk about that on the next film.
Okay, because I would say for this one, and maybe we'll end it here. I felt like it wasn't really emphasized that like his circumstances were out of his control.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you live in your mom's basement, that sucks, but you seem like a thinking human being capable of doing things. Like, you have a job. You know what I mean? Like, you're... I don't know. I'm not so sympathetic.
Right. I mean, even in his home, even in his own memories or imagination, when there's a part of the film where Jerry Langford has this mystery guest come on while Rupert's on the show with, you know, Dr. Joyce Brothers and stuff, and it turns out it's his ex-high school principal who said, you know, you were such a loser back then, you know, but even in his own mind, I think he understood that.
Yeah.
But I'll talk about what you talk about in the next film.
All right.
Okay.
That's called a teaser.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take a break and come back with the Joker, or just Joker.
Joker.
Just Joker.
How can you stand the silence that pervades when we all cry? How can you watch the violence that erupts before your eyes? How can you tell us something?
We're back. A second failed comedian movie of the week. Seems kind of odd to describe this movie as a failed comedian movie. Is 2019's Joker. So Matt, I have successfully gotten you to watch two Joker movies in like the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. Less than that.
Right.
How does that make you feel?
I love this movie.
Really?
I loved it a lot more than... I like... With the joke, is that what it is?
The Dark Knight. Yep,
I like that a lot. I love this movie. This is what to me, all these clown movies. When I see, I don't know clowns, but what clowns? You know, you want to feel empathy for them a little bit. You know, the sad clown. You never felt that in The Dark Knight.
No.
This guy, I kind of felt sorry for. You know, I had a lot of empathy for him. He was a clown. He was dangerous and, you know, and all that stuff. But, you know, I kind of had every emotion for this guy. And if there's a better actor in the world today than Joaquin Phoenix, he was mesmerizing in this role.
He was. Everything from the way he spoke to, like, I don't know how you do this as an actor, and maybe it's more like the makeup, but he looked like he smoked 25 camels a day.
Right.
And had been for 20 years. You know what I mean? Like, he just had that, like...
leather face.
He looked like an old transmission mechanic. And just, like, just... Oh, yeah. And just, like... And the, all it's, like, the way that he... Like, his body, right? His body looked, I don't, for lack of a better word, gross.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Like, hunchy and...
He had to, his whole body contorted.
But then even like, just like going off on like his movement, like also he's doing like the way he would dance as a clown.
Yes.
Was interesting.
Yes.
And also the way he ran.
Yes.
Like he ran like a crazy person.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's just like, I don't know how he did that, but he totally transformed into like this, like his character. And I guess, so I think I wasn't very articulate when I was talking about like, the previous movie,
King of Comedy,
Rupert.
Yeah,
Rupert Pumpkin.
Yeah.
But I felt so. I guess the difference for me is like I feel like this character, the Joker character, never had a chance.
Never had a chance. And to a certain extent, I don't think Rupert Pupkin probably ever did because of his personality, you know. But this guy, from the get-go, in Phoenix just played that. I mean, this is one of the best acting jobs I've ever seen.
Well,
in my imagination.
I think he won the Oscar for it, right?
He did, yeah.
Deservedly so.
Yes.
I think.
I don't know who else was up there, you know, but this... I couldn't take my eyes off of him the whole movie. And you're right. I noticed the dancing, the looks, the when he'd look in the mirror, how old he looked, you know, and those kind of things. Because mm-hmm. he just did such a fabulous job.
Just like the way that he would smoke. Mm-hmm. Just, I mean, everything, right? Everything.
Right, right, right.
Every little thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I mean, I love Joaquin Phoenix, but this is his... role right here, I think.
He was up against Adam Driver in Marriage Story. Yeah. I haven't seen that yet. Jonathan Pryce in The Two Popes. Yeah. Mm. Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory. Yeah. Yeah. And DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as much as I love that movie, this is, yeah, his.
Yeah, I mean, this is a role where you're like, he's becoming this person, right?
He
like,
is.
He's transforming completely. Like, Leonardo, great actor. Still acting.
Yeah.
Like, Joaquin is, like, at the higher level.
And Todd Phillips, who I don't know, you know, as far as directors, writers.
You would be surprised. I believe he's the gentleman who brought us the Hangover trilogy.
I think he did. Yeah, he's, like, mostly comedies.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Hangover Part 3, Part 2. He's a producer a lot. Yeah, he's got 16 director credits. War Dogs, I think I saw that.
It's Miles Teller and who's the big guy?
Yeah, the fat guy. He used to be fat.
Jonah Hill.
Yeah, Jonah.
He's big. He's little.
Whatever he is today, I think he's back to being big.
I think so too. But he's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, Todd Phillips, I wonder what the angle was for this. I wonder if he was just like, read the comics when he was a kid and was just like, you know, I have an angle on this.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, he did Road Trip, Old School, those kind of things. That was his directing. And then he does this.
Mm-hmm.
Does all these comedies.
Mm-hmm.
That are okay.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hangover was fun.
I'm pretty sure Todd Phillips has a very large house.
Yeah, he's sure. I mean, he's done a lot. But this is unbelievable.
What did you think? Like, what did you think about? So when I first watched this in 2019, I didn't have like the really good sense of like 70s gritty New York cinema because we weren't doing the show then.
Right.
But now that I've watched a bunch of that stuff, like I felt like he captured it so well without. I mean, as much as you could with like the modern lens. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, this took place in the 70s, I felt like.
It did.
Right?
Because the movie theater,
yeah,
there was 70s movies playing on the movie. I think that somehow.
But even without that, you would know it. You would know, like, okay, that's the gritty New York City, or quote-unquote Gotham, whatever.
Gotham looked like New York City in the 70s.
And, like.
And that's part of it, the garbage strike and all that stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's so interesting that, like, he captured this idea that the angst and anxiety that people are feeling like kind of mid to post Obama is what people were feeling in the 70s. Like right. He like somehow like made those parallel.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
And it made it works.
Right. Especially the late 70s. Well, in the early 70s, New York was just a mess. Mid 70s. Started kind of coming out of it. Yeah. You could see it. I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. New York. You know, people are miserable. Pissed off, they're rioting, you know, kill the rich, kind of thing.
Yeah. Not a bad anyway. So this movie starts with Joaquin Phoenix being a sign twirler, right?
Right.
And he gets jumped by a bunch of kids.
Yep.
It's all downhill from there. That's what it starts.
Pretty much. He gets beat up because he wanted his sign back.
Yeah.
And he chased and chased.
Yep.
Love that scene when he's running through the streets mm-hmm. after these guys. Mm-hmm. You know.
Then he cuts down that alley and bam.
Yeah.
And then they just like jump him.
Right.
And then they just start going through his pockets and leave him. Yeah, his one attempt at justice fails, right? And so mm-hmm. it's like, okay. That's how it's gonna be.
That's how his whole life has been up mm-hmm. to that point.
Yeah.
Just knocked down again.
And his social worker is, you know, not super helpful.
So that's another way you could tell it was the 70s. We're smoking in the office.
Right.
Can't do that today.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was no help.
Yeah. But, you know, also sympathetic to her, right? Right. He's probably like, you know, number 37 to 55 people she has to talk to that day, right? What's right. she supposed to do?
There's no money for anything. They, mm. You know, they're lucky to get meds. Now they're not going to get any meds.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so one of his clown buddies gives him a gun so he could take care of himself. He's getting chewed out because he lost the sign that got right, busted right. over his face.
Nobody has any sympathy for him.
No, not really. Bunch of clowns.
Right.
So he, yeah, then we kind of see like his, not much happens in this movie, right? We see his home life. His mom is sort of losing her mind.
Right.
She thinks she's connected to Bruce Wayne. I understand that you have to have Bruce Wayne in this movie if you're making a movie called Joker.
Mm-hmm.
I could have done without that. 100%.
Right. Yeah, I don't. It didn't set... Unless they're setting up Joker 2, which has been announced.
They are.
Which, of course, somebody might have thought of that. But, no, I didn't think it had... I mean, I knew... You know, I knew that that's... I mean, I'm watching... Oh, yeah, okay, you got to have Bruce Wayne. Alfred is mm-hmm. in there for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no Michael Caine, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Or whatever, but... No, I could have done without, too. I don't think we needed it.
Mm-hmm.
We just needed a rich guy.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know.
And that's kind of like what it was in my mind. I was like, okay, I know it's Bruce Wayne, but I'm not even going to get caught up in like... Because every Batman movie tells the Batman origin story again. It's like, fucking, we get it. His right. parents were killed. Like,
right.
stop.
Right. And what his parents are going to a movie when there's rioting out in the streets is beyond me.
Hey, that's like that let them eat cake kind of attitude, right? right? You right. know, it's like, yeah, it doesn't affect us. We're above it all.
Yeah.
So we see his home life. Mom, not so great. You know, they have somewhat of like a loving relationship. Like he gets in bed and watches, you know.
He takes care of her.
Watches the late show with her, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she's just a parasite.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And we find out later that she's insane. So we're yeah. not sure of that
okay.
until later.
Yeah. Find out later. Like, I'm pretty sure we could
yeah.
deduce. And his neighbor, who's this like beautiful younger woman mm-hmm. with a child.
Who smiles at him once.
Yeah. She makes the mistake of she's like, does it like pretending to kill herself because yeah. the kid's like being annoying.
Right.
And then he turns back and like.
He does it.
He does it in a way that's like, all right, man, we were just okay. joking. Like you took it to like 10.
Right. And then we see them together at certain points. And
mm-hmm.
He's living in fantasy land too.
Yep. This is the Rupert Pupkin.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's a total callback to King of Comedy, right? I mean, even down to the way the woman looks.
This movie is King of Comedy.
Yeah.
If it was made 40 years later by Martin Scorsese.
Yeah.
That's what I kept thinking. This is the same movie. Pretty much.
But.
The lead characters are different.
Uh-huh.
You know, one is extremely violent and the other is just an idiot.
Extremely violent. No, I would say I would push back on extremely. It's not like the other Joker movie where indiscriminate killing. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, you kind of...
Got picked on. Three guys, so he shoots him.
Yeah, he gets accosted by three guys in the subway. Total New York douchebag financial bros. I mean...
But then he chases after the guy to kill him.
But, okay, maybe this says more about me than it does the movie, but weren't you kind of rooting for him to kill those guys?
Oh, of course. I don't like those guys.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's...
But I still think he was just... In the scene where he kills the clown later is pretty violent. So
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That is violent. Oh, that reminds me, when I was talking to my coworker and she just started watching Ozark. Mm-hmm. She's like, it's pretty violent. And I was like, I didn't really find it to be violent. And then she went home and told her husband. He's like, what the fuck movie is he watching? Or TV show is he watching? I was like, oh yeah, I
guess that's like the first episode. Yeah. That guy falls out of the sky.
Yeah, I guess I just kind of desensitized. So anyway, so yeah, so he kills his people in the subway. And then the cops start kind of coming around asking some questions. People in the streets, you know, it's like a big story. People in the streets are sort of like rallying around it. A clown killed these assholes. Mm-hmm. You know, they're standing for like the, you know, the nameless rich.
Right.
The
oppressors. And then Wayne says something about him while he's being a
bunch of clowns.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then people start wearing the clown fit. That's like their, that's like.
Falter.
Yeah. That's like their QAnon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Right.
That's their QAnon makeup or tag or MAGA hat or the hell you want to call it. And we just sort of, we have this like very like inside quiet story of like the Joker losing his mind. Then like we get these glimpses of like just outside is on fire, right. Essentially.
Right.
And.
It's almost like the Joker is the only sane person.
Because
the way he's reacting.
Yeah. He's just like sort of just taking it as it comes. Mm-hmm. Still doing his clownly duties. He's going to children's hospitals. Gun falls out while he's dancing. Not a good look.
Yeah. In my act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in my act.
Right? Well, in the 70s, you probably could have a gun in your act.
Gets fired.
Yeah.
He's home. We kind of figure out that the woman thing is a total fantasy. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't obvious.
Right. I mean,
and I'm trying to like figure out like the order of things. Like his mother gets taken to the hospital, right?
Right. The cops come to talk to her. She has a stroke. Mm-hmm. So they have to bring her to the hospital. And he...
Then he goes back to his place and he sees the young woman and follows her, like walks into her to her place.
Right.
And she's like terrified. She's like, what are you doing here?
Right.
And that's when you realize she doesn't know who he is.
Oh, she goes, Rupert, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Is that your name?
Uh-huh.
He goes, I had a bad day.
Yeah. And then the next scene, we see he's walking out of the apartment.
Right.
Did he murder them?
Not sure.
Because the next scene, he gets back to his place, and I always like a movie where I see something I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. He crawls into a refrigerator.
Right.
Never saw that before.
Yeah, all of a sudden he starts emptying out his refrigerator, takes out the, you know, the racks and stuff, and he climbs in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, you know, kids used to die in those things.
Right, so. That's what I was thinking. Like, I remember like at the end of like every 80s sitcom, there was like an announcement, like, don't crawl into refrigerators.
Right. Yeah, that was strange.
Mm-hmm.
But we're left to, we don't know.
We don't know.
What he did.
Yep.
We like to think no. But he is losing it.
He is losing it.
Yeah.
So that happens. His coworkers come to visit him, right?
Yeah, the two clowns. One that was kind of mean to him. One that gave him the gun, but he's also kind of mean to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the
shorter fella.
Shorter fella.
And kills the big guy pretty violently.
Like,
lets the little guy go.
He says, you were always nice to me.
Right? So then maybe that is an argument that he did not kill that woman because maybe she was nice to him. But maybe in that moment when she reacted like that, she wasn't nice to him. Who knows? Joker logic.
Yeah.
Hard to find.
I'm sure it's on the cutting room floor somewhere.
Possibly. It's better that we don't know, though.
Right. I think so.
I like the idea of, like, did he? Did he not? And then he goes to the mental institution, finds out his mom's crazy. That's kind of like yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And then
he kills her.
Hmm?
He kills his mom. Yeah.
Right.
With a pillow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Confronts Bruce Wayne. He's not having it. And then he ends up on the... Oh, we forgot. The B-plot.
Yeah.
So this late-night talk show who is De Niro, who's playing... But it's not the same name. I wish it was. I wish they just called it Rupert Pupkin, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe Scorsese doesn't want to sign off on that, or...
Probably not.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But yeah, I don't know.
You know, like, just make it the same guy to give some continuity.
Yeah.
So he's been like playing a clip of the Joker bombing at a comedy show.
Yeah.
They're making fun of it all week. Finally invites him on. Come on the show.
Yeah.
So he comes on the show, full clown makeup. Mm-hmm. And he sits down. They're having a nice chat.
Yeah.
And he shoots him.
Shoots him.
I did not see it coming.
No, I didn't either.
Yeah. Like, I thought there'd be a little bit more of a back and forth, but he just, like, kind of takes him out pretty quickly.
Right.
Then there's a thing where he stands up and kind of, like, runs for a second. And he's like, where am I actually going? They just escapes, right?
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of, like, the cops chasing him and he's going back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of silly, but...
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah.
But... And he's, like, he's in the wind, right? He's part of the mob. And the mob is on his side. And
yep.
They don't know that he's the Joker, but he's one of them.
Yeah. He's... Yeah, he... They don't know he's their leader, but yeah.
He inspired the movement, even though he's remaining anonymous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I forgot. I forget to mention too that his mother told him that he was, or his mother thought that he was Bruce Wayne's son, or not Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. All that like did nothing for me. Like right.
Thomas.
The scene where he goes and meets the little kid Batman. It's like okay.
Right.
So I think in the comics, the way it plays out is like this person that we watched is not actually the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
It's the person that inspires the Joker.
Oh, okay.
That's why the age difference is not so great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Matt, that is the Joker in all of its darkness.
Oh, there's a scene at the end that I wanted to ask you about. He's with another psychiatrist or something. Then he walks out afterwards, and he's walking down the hall. Did you see blood on his shoes?
Yeah.
Okay, so he killed the...
Yes,
okay.
yes. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, he's increasingly violent, right?
Right.
And I think that's when they're trying to chase him, and he's kind of running around.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
he's,
yeah,
like, dancing in between scenes, and it's like, yeah, is that actually happening? Is the dancing happening? It's like that kind of, like, he's an unreliable narrator at right. this point. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm glad you liked it. I wasn't sure.
I thoroughly love it. I'll watch it again, too, just to watch his performance. I'll wait a while. But yeah, I this is one of the best things I've seen in a long time.
Oh, nice.
I really, really, really liked it. I just, I thought the story was really good, except for the whole Bruce Wayne thing.
Eh, whatever.
You know, but
it didn't really take, it wasn't too much of it. You know what I mean? It was like, okay, I get it. You got to throw it in there.
But I like a combination of his home life, his fantasy life, his real life out in the world,
yeah,
know, just trying to make it, that kind of thing. Everything just came together for me with this. And then, you know, Phoenix is, like I said, is mesmerizing. His performance is mesmerizing. It's about as much as an actor can do, I think.
Yeah, what else you want, right?
Yeah, what else you want? I mean, it's physically, mentally, everything was perfect.
Yeah, and I mean, I like the direction. I think the direction doesn't get... I mean, I just like the... I mean, like, that staircase.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, that he's always walking up and down. It's just, like, just stuff like that, where it's like, God, that's, like, the perfect... It's just, like, a perfect
spot. No, I agree with you. I thought... I'm looking and say, who is this guy, you know?
Who is this guy?
Todd Phillips. I don't know who he is. And I look at all these comedies he made. Like, okay. But, yeah, I thought his comedy... I thought his... direction was really good. It was just the camera placement and stuff was so important in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. For, I mean, it's just,
sure.
I know it's not for everybody, but like I say, but this is really worth seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also produced by Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I saw that. Yeah. I guess he's got a lot of movies we don't know.
Yeah. I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I never told you my story when I watched this for the first time. So I first watched this. I was in Vietnam on business with our old neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And so we walked. So first of all, Vietnamese, we went to like, so like we went to like the bougie theater where it's like, hey, you can pay $2 for this ticket or pay $3.50 and go to like the place with like, you know, couches and stuff. We're like, oh, let's do that. Because what the fuck, right? We're American imperialists and we're exploiting these people. So whatever, let's might as well do it. So we do that. Like they bring you some tea beforehand and all this shit. So over the top. Anyway, so there's probably maybe theater fits 20 people.
Oh, yeah.
There's maybe 8 people in there total.
Hmm.
And so we walk out. And we're both like, whoa. After watching this movie, we're like, you know, it's one of those things where you walk out and you're like, let's not speak for a few minutes, that's right?
Pulp Fiction, when I came out of that with my friends, we all just sort of looked at each other, let's just walk.
And so I go to the bathroom because I have to, you know, drop a deuce. And the Vietnamese bathroom doors, like stall doors, it's more like a traditional closet door, like the slats in it.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting down doing my business. It's totally dead quiet. And suddenly the door slams open. Pow! As you see these sneakers walk in, this guy starts singing the Four Non Blonde song, What's Going On? I don't know if you know this one. It's like, I wake in the morning, I get real high, and I take a deep breath, and I step... Anyway, he starts singing the song, which is kind of a crazy song to be singing. I mean, it's popular in 1993. Mm-hmm. And he's just walking back and forth in front of the stall. And I'm like, what the... I'm like, am I going to get knifed by, like, some Vietnamese teenager? And so he's just doing that. And I'm just like, okay, well, I'm going to be done here in a second, and, like, got to leave here eventually, right? Yeah, then he walks out, and I'm like, like, okay. And so, like, I'm like, all right, finish up, wash my hands. I walk outside. I see our old neighbor standing there who's waiting for me, and he's just, like, looking, like, kind of frozen. And I was like, hey, are you okay? He's like, let's get the fuck out of here. I'm like, why? He's like, this dude walked out of the bathroom and just started singing and walking around me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what'd you do? He's like, I didn't know what to do. He wasn't like yelling at me or touching me. He was just walking around me, just singing the song very slowly. And then his girlfriend walked out of the bathroom and he walked over to her like nothing happened and they left.
That's crazy.
I think this movie creates psychopathic behavior.
Oh, I like the soundtrack of this movie too. I thought it was good.
I don't remember.
I just thought, oh, that's a perfect song for this.
It won Best Achievement in Music Written for Motion Pictures, won an Oscar.
Okay.
So, guess we you got agreed. Good taste. Yeah. guest scores. We didn't do that yet.
Okay.
So, I will tell you that this is, it's up, it's on the IMDb Top 100. So, it's according to IMDb, it's the number 72 movie of all time. 1.2 million people left a review.
8.4. Okay. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people who love this movie for maybe the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, there's like a little bit of controversy. Like, this is like, it's like, well, you're making something to inspire people to do violence. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I didn't get that at all.
But
I mean,
because you wouldn't ever think like that.
I don't think like that.
But I don't either, really. But I'm just saying, like, I think that, if you're going to criticize this movie, you're going to be like, yeah, you are glorifying violence and making, you know, this person who probably should be seeking mental help look more like a hero.
Right.
And now that I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes scores, I think that's reflective in the critics score. 592 reviews from critics.
Critics. That sounds bad.
68.
What?
Yeah, man. I'm trying to remember, like, at the time this came out, I think there was a lot of pushback on it.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
I don't get that at all.
Yeah, here's an example. This is from some magazine I've never heard of, but this is the kind of the feeling. Joker doesn't understand his representation of violence because it doesn't know what to do with its politics, opting instead for a confused aestheticization of anarchy, all incendiary chants and masked malcontents thronging the streets.
That's what's going on today.
Yeah, right. It's like that is the point.
Yeah.
That is the point. So
And their leaders are jokers. If you look at it that way. They're just saying, okay, this is what's happening. And look who's the leader. You know, it's just like being there with violence.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah, no, it is true. It is I think it was more like a critique on this or at least like a, hey, everyone, look at what's happening.
Right.
Like, let's lift up this fucking rock and actually see, you know, how people are, like, how we have a bunch of people who are suffering and they're being ignored. And guess what happens? Uvalde. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the audience score, over 50,000 people, 88.
Okay. I don't agree with
I don't either.
I think the IMDb is the closest.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. All right, Matt. So, anything else? Any other thoughts? No. Oh, the critics' consensus. I did not read it. Joker gives his infamous central character a chillingly plausible origin story that serves as a brilliant showcase for its star and a dark evolution for comics-inspired cinema. Yeah, we need more comic movies like this.
Yeah.
Less people punching each other in the sky.
Yeah.
All right. Next week,
we're going to watch bad cop movies. Bad Lieutenant, Abel Ferrara's... Just pretty weird movie.
And I'm going to have you watch... what is this called? A Hard Day, which is a Korean film starring Sung Kyun Lee, who I think you'll recognize when you see him. All right, let's get out of here.
Bye.
Peace.
He's a Philistine.
What's a Philistine?
It's a guy who doesn't care about books or interesting films and things.
Then I'm a Philistine.
No, you're interested in books and things.
No, I'm a Philistine.
You've been shitting in my yard.
I have not.
You want me to hold the chicken, huh?
I want you to hold it between your knees.
So, Jane, what you do here in effect is count boners.
It's fun.